A great privilege to welcome Chris back up to join me at the front again. And so welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to see you. And we are doing part two of our series on addressing anxiety. And some of you are probably thinking, I'm glad it's not me or Chris up there, because public speaking is one of the things that can be very anxiety producing for some people. And so maybe if you've ever been thrown into a situation where you've had to do public speaking or some other thing that causes you anxiety, I just want you to go there for a moment. Just in your memory, just imagine that you were having to do that anxious thing. Are we all anxious now? Because that's good, because we're going to be having a go at addressing anxiety. So I guess, look, Chris, maybe if you could give us a brief recap from last time. What is anxiety? How do we appreciate? How do we experience it? Not appreciate it, because I don't think we could be appreciating it, but how do we experience it?
Okay, so David asked you to try and imagine a scenario there. So if you really got into the groove of that, you might have been worried or apprehensive about that event coming up in the future. So you're probably all very familiar with the feeling. So that's the fight, flight, fright response. So you're going to have shallow breathing, tummy upsets, gastrointestinal problems, heart rate's going to go up, you might feel clammy and sweaty. I think you all know what kind of feels like.
Okay, and now that we've induced anxiety in everybody and they've known what it actually is that they're experiencing, if I was experiencing anxiety and if these people were experiencing anxiety at the moment, what should I actually do?
Okay, so I'm going to go through quite a lot of things, so bear with me. I've already said to David that I'm buying myself out of a job here. I'm doing myself out of a job because these are some of my favourite tips.
So we're getting them for free.
You're getting them for free.
Rather than Medicare. We will put some notes, I think, in the hub, so people try and, like, there's going to be a dot points, and you'll obviously be able to go back to the recording as well. But, yes, that's great.
So the first thing, and it sounds really obvious, but it is actually to do something about it if you can. So if there is a situation that you can attend to and do something about, do it. You'd be surprised how often we want to put off or avoid doing those difficult things. So it might be that you have to have a difficult conversation with someone and you know you have to have it, but you don't really want to do it because you know it's going to be hard and difficult, so you put it away. And that avoidance generally makes the anxiety go worse. So best port of call, if you can, deal with it, tick it off your to-do list and move on. Suppose then that you can't do anything about it. We then go to, you know, what's going on in my head? What am I worrying about? And I'm going to give you, there's a lot of...
There's some ringing.
So. Ringing.
Chris, just bring them, like, a little bit closer to your mouth. I think that might help.
Yeah.
Is that a bit better? That's a bit better.
Yeah,
just
bend.
Yeah,
that's better.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So then we need to start thinking about what's going on in our head. And I'm going to give you a case example of a person, completely anonymous, so it's all safe. So it will give you an idea of what was going on in her head, but more importantly, how we can help ourselves by asking ourselves some pretty good questions to know and work out, do I really need to be worried about this situation? So this lady came and saw me because of her anxiety about her husband being late home from work. So they lived in Aspendale and he worked in Richmond. This is all, of course, before COVID. And he would take that route quite a lot of the, you know, most days of the week. But when he was late home, like say half an hour to an hour, she became so distressed, she would actually start to ring local hospitals to find out had there been a crash, and to check in with the emergency department. So we can ask ourselves some questions here, though, to make it a bit more realistic. So one of the questions is, on that route from Richmond to, say, Aspendale, between, say, 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock at night, how many cars are going to be on that road and that route and that journey. And we guess maybe say 5,000. And I asked her, well, then of that 5,000, how many will have actually crashed? So two, maybe two. What do you reckon, two? So 2 divided by 5,000 works out to 0.0004. I worked this out before I came here. 4% likelihood of an accident. So the odds of him actually, realistically, having an accident are very, very low. Then we can go to things like, what's his previous experience? So is he a good driver? Is he dodgy? And at this point, she looked really sheepish and she said, well, actually, he's never had a crash. So, however, if that same woman was a mother and she had a teenage son who had got his license and maybe had had it for 6 months but had already had a couple of bingles, then that mother would have better reason to worry if her son... Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Yeah. More realistic. We could also then have a look at other possible reasons. You know, flat tyre, boss called him back after work, whatever, whatever. But we generally go to the worst case scenario. He's late, he's had a crash, oh my goodness. Fear, stress and worry. And the final kind of questionings that we can ask is to put ourselves, get the other person to be in our shoes. So it could be, if she was late home, and he was at home waiting for her, would he worry? And you'll laugh because at this point she said, well, he probably wouldn't even notice that. It was only when it was kind of like getting dinner time and he was kind of, oh, you know, I'm a bit hungry. Where is she? So if he doesn't worry or another person doesn't worry, then we've got kind of more confidence to know that maybe I shouldn't worry. So we think about the scriptures in this. In 2 Corinthians 10, we talk about, it's a great, great section, and it says something like, take captive every thought. Take captive every thought and bring it into the obedience of Christ. So we can get really carried away with a lot of catastrophic thinking, but it's not based on reality, and therefore it's doing us harm. Okay, I'll go on.
That's really good, yeah. So the first thing is do something about it, if you can. Tick it off the list, clear it out of the way. The second one is to then interrogate your anxiety to see how realistic is. Yeah, good. Excellent.
So then we need to look at all of the what-if statements that go through our head. What if he's crashed? What if I lose my job? What if she doesn't talk to me again? Blah, 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 blah. So you remember we did the hand model of the brain last time. So just a very quick recap. So this is your brain. This is your thinking brain. When we're stressed, we can see the limbic brain or the emotional brain. And then we've got down here, we've got kind of like the brain stem, which is in charge of things that we don't have a whole lot of control over. So when we imagine something in our mind, like say, David did it earlier, but I'm going to suggest a scary scene. So your scary scene that I'm presenting to you is that you have to go bungee jumping after church. Okay? I can see Rosie shaking. So there you are, and I'm going to imagine this. So here you are, you're climbing up the ladder. It's a metal ladder. It's a fairly overcast day, and... You know, the man kindly kind of ties the bungee cord around you and he says, look, you've only got 3 more to go. You're on your own now and you're there and you're walking up and you're standing there on this little wooden platform and the breeze is coming and you look down and there's this deep chasm and there's water at the bottom and you're just about to leap head first. Okay, so I pictured that in my head, and if you did the same, you would probably be feeling some apprehension about doing that because, well, did anybody notice? Did anybody go, ooh, I didn't want to do that? Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your honesty. I appreciate it.
Everybody else didn't want to either, but they were just too...
Yeah.
I was too late.
So this part of the brain does not have a very good grasp of reality. It struggles to differentiate between imagination and reality. So when you picture those things in your head, the brain goes, oh, it's happening for real. Oh, I'm going to do a bungee jump. I'm going to have a car accident, whatever. And I think then we are very cruel to ourselves, because what we're actually doing is making these horror movies. We're making these horror movies and we're making ourselves watch them over and over and over again. And we wouldn't do that to a little child. We just would not do that. But we are doing that to ourselves. When we are creating all of these horror stories, yeah, not very good. Not very good at all. Okay? The mind has to do something. And so if we don't want it to do that scary thinking, we give it something else to do. So it could be something like doing the breathing that we did last week, or a body scan. But basically we're shifting the focus away from the scary thing and giving our body a chance to kind of recover from that. And obviously, of course, we want to commit the situation to God in prayer. You know, cast all your cares upon him because he cares for you. But we don't want to hand that over to God and then keep going on about, it could be this, it could be that, because that's just back into thinking. So just be aware that God already knows about the situation, and ultimately we're all secure and safe in God. So, yeah.
I think that's really good. A minister friend of mine years ago talked about having problems like a broken watch, and then you go and give it to the watchmaker to fix, but then you go and grab it and take it back again.
Yes.
And so that's exactly what you talked about, is, okay, I'll give it to God, now I've got to leave it with God. Yeah. And I really love the that thing about there's the horror, picturing it as the horror movie, and then having to do something else, because it's like, yeah, if you just tell yourself stop thinking about it, it's very hard to do.
Exactly.
And so switching, and I like the switching to something physical and concrete, because that's not a what if, that's not a maybe, but yes, I actually have a body and I am, my breath rate is going fast or whatever. I'm grounding myself in something that's really good. I think that's really, really helpful. And I think that's helpful for us sort of in the general sweep of life and the general things that might be going on. But there might be times when it actually, our level of anxiety, a bit like that lady, gets a bit more. And so I'm wondering when it might be actually wise for us to seek out professional help and to keep you in employment.
Thanks for that. So, yes, anxiety, unfortunately, is part of the deal of being human. You can't not have anxiety. If I did, I would. If you said you didn't, I don't think you'd have a pulse. But what we're looking at here is when the anxiety has become a problem in and of itself. So you might, not saying you, I'm just saying generally, a person might not be starting to function well at work or at school, or their social life has really started to get smaller because they're too frightened to meet up with people. So their functioning has gone down, but also it could be that just that physical distress, and you know what that feeling's like, it's just awful, it becomes too much of a problem. And I'm not talking about like one-off situations here. I'm talking more about a more regular pattern of problems. We all have those moments, those peak moments. This is when it's becoming more of a problem on an ongoing basis that you'd see someone. And I would suggest first port of call is go to your GP and talk to them about that. They might suggest going to see a psychologist or a counsellor. Probably not necessary to see a psychiatrist in most situations. So psychiatrists are the ones who give drugs. Psychologists don't. And of all of the mental health conditions, anxiety is probably the one that is most amenable to being helped. Having said that, I want to talk a little bit about young people. So in terms of, like, if I was to do a, like, So as a psychologist, we are looking for peak periods in people's lives when stuff happens. You know, dementia happens at that end of the scale, the time scale. But for people who are kind of like Wes's age, the Not As Boy's age, they are at their, sorry to say, the peak period where it's most likely going to be a problem. And the reason for that is that they've kind of been thrust into this world and meant to be expected to be adults with all the responsibilities and all of the, well, you need to be an adult now. And they haven't had a lot of practice. And so with not being competent to do some stuff because it's new, they then don't feel very confident. So competence builds confidence. And when confidence comes, our anxiety goes down. So as we progress through life, we become more and more confident in our ability to cope with stuff. We might have a new situation come before us, but it could very well be, well, I'm okay. You know, I can manage this. And so we can feel maybe a little less stressed.
Yeah, but that's really helpful for young people to know that. But I guess there's also the situation where other events that happen maybe even later in life that can really knock us off our perk, if you like, and we can experience anxiety that we maybe never had before. Maybe it's because things are now out of our control, or there's things that we can't do that we used to be able to do, or circumstances have changed that are substantially different to what we're comfortable with, and we can then have anxiety begin to develop then. Is that with that?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, so life has a funny way of throwing stuff at you that you may not have encountered. Those are terrific moments for us to do a lot of digging in to God. So I'd just like to come back to that whole idea, though, that if you're sitting here, you have probably got through life reasonably well. You are still alive. You're functioning. It might not have been perfect, but in psychology we talk about the science part of psychology is that we look at past behaviour of a person in order to predict, generally speaking, predict their future behaviour. And if you've got through life up to, say, 40s and you've done okay, we're largely going to expect that you can cope with the next until you fall off your perch.
Yeah. Okay.
Also, though, sorry.
Yeah, that's good.
Is to commit all of this to God.
Yep.
And so God is not going to rescue us out of every situation. And you know, you think of Jesus' life. He had all sorts of bad things even before he got to the Garden of Gethsemane. So why should we be any different? What we do know, though, is that we've got this confidence that ultimately, we are safe and secure with God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd also like to just give you some basic self-care tips. So it sounds kind of corny, but...
So this is about helping us be better placed to actually deal with anxiety if it comes up tomorrow or next week or next month or whatever. Well, there's things that we can do now that essentially get us more fit for coping or going through those things.
Yeah.
Excellent. So this is more the first half is really about cure. So if we are anxious, these are things that we should do. But this is more about prevention.
Correct.
Or getting ready so that we have more capacity to.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, so we want to be building our resilience. And a lot of the stuff you will already be doing. So that's things like just eat well. So this is actually an organ up here. This is a, you know, it's a thing. It's a jelly thing and we need to nourish it really well. So if you eat kind of junk food, dodgy food, it's, you know, rubbish in, rubbish out. So look after it well. Drink well. So caffeine, we all love the coffee or the tea. But if you've got an anxiety problem, you might want to, you know, pull back a little bit on how much caffeine you have, because caffeine is a stimulant. We all know that. That's why often a lot of people have it. But the stimulant effect, it mimics the same as anxiety. In fact, some people can have coffee and then that tips them into a panic attack because the brain's going, oh, I know what that thudding heart means. There must be a danger. and then poof, they go into a panic attack. So move your body well. So
what about alcohol? You talked about caffeine. Oh, what about alcohol?
Yeah. So alcohol is problematic for some people because they may feel anxious the day after. So they've had a nice party and relaxed on that night, but they can wake up quite agitated the next day. Thanks for the reminder. So physical activity is probably one of the most powerful antidotes for feeling when we're feeling anxious, to go and burn off some of that energy at the gym for a brisk walk or whatever, a swim. But it's also just helps our bodies in general function better, blood flow to the brain and all that kind of stuff. Have good friends. So this is one of the absolute benefits of being in a faith community such as ours, that we have this sense of belonging, we have this sense of connection, and people can come alongside us and help us if necessary, or they can, you know, normalise some of our fears and we don't feel like we're alone and we're spinning out. So that sense of community can be really good. Have time for fun and laughter, because you can't really be super hyper anxious and also laughing your socks off in a movie at the same time. They just don't kind of go together. And of course, pray.
Yeah.
If it's possible, I'd like to give you a bit of science behind.
Oh, excellent. I'm always up for some science.
Thank you, David. Yeah. Thanks. So you will have probably heard of mindfulness, which is in schools. What I'd like to tell you, though, is it's actually a very... We've now got a lot of science behind that, where we've done really very rigorous scientific experiments on people's brains and just how beneficial mindful meditation is for people. So what generally happens is you get a group of people and we measure their brains through like functional MRIs or PET scans. And so we've got a baseline measure of what their brain is functioning at normally. And then we put them through, say, an 8-week meditation program where they're doing a meditation every day for 8 weeks. And then we zap their brains again and find out, oh, what's going on there now? So they've done 8 weeks of that mindfulness. And what they found is these overall patterns again and again and again, that the structures in the brain are actually changing over that course of time. So we've got white matter and we've got grey matter in the brain. And the grey matter becomes thicker through meditation. And that's going to work on things like emotion regulation, which is the ability to calm down. It's going to increase problem solving and planning. So it's good to have a thicker brain in that sense. It's like a denser brain. I don't mean you're thick, I'm saying a thicker brain. But also remember this chap, so the amygdala here will shrink. Like it actually gets smaller. They see and compare and they go, oh wow, it's actually smaller, which means that it's quietened down. This fight-flight response thing will generally be quietening down through the regular mindfulness kind of practice. So there's heaps of scriptures about that. There's heaps of resources about that. There is an excellent website called themindfulchristian.com, which can give you a whole lot of information about the integration of mindfulness with your faith. But I thought I'd finish with a psalm just before David takes over again. So Psalm 131, and this is, I think, the Message version, but nearly all of the versions had a very good take on it. So, God, I'm not trying to rule the roost. I don't want to be king of the mountain. I haven't meddled where I have no business, or fantasize grandiose plans. I've kept my feet on the ground. I've cultivated a quiet heart, like a baby content in its mother's arms. My soul is a baby content.
So that's 131. Yeah. And actually, part of the thing, one of the reasons we encourage people to have some sort of Bible reading plan, and the one that's in our Bible reading app has some part of the Psalms every day, is because there's actually lots in the Psalms that speak directly to issues like anxiety. And this practice here about calming and quietening our soul is essentially what the mindfulness thing is. It's, okay, I'm taking aware of what it is that's disturbing my soul at the moment, the emotions I'm experiencing in my body, and then I'm laying them down, or I'm giving them to God, or whatever. So this is not just like newfangled stuff. This is actually deep and historic stuff that's part of the way that God has made us. And so it's about this quietening us all. And even, for example, like Psalm 139. Which is the great psalm on God being with us. If I go to the heavens, you're there. If I go to the depths, you're there. If I go to the far side of the sea, you're there. And God is with us all the time. And then the psalmist sort of breaks out into this sort of, in the last part of the psalm says, if only God, you would slay the wicked away from me, all you are bloodthirsty. It's like this person is playing a horror movie in their mind, right? So they've just affirmed, God's with me, but then this horror movie flashes across their eyes. But then he brings it back by saying, search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. And so it's not just me dealing with my anxious thoughts, but you're inviting God into, okay, God, help me understand my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me, and then lead me in the way everlasting. So it's not just me quietening myself and having to deal with the anxious myself, but I'm inviting God in to the process and saying, okay, now let's not keep replaying that, but lead me in a way into life. Lead me into that. And the other well-known psalm that talks about this is Psalm 46. Be still and know that I am God. And the context of that psalm is conflict. I mean, it's national conflict, but it's conflict. And so in the midst of conflict, which is usually very anxiety-producing, okay, be still and know that I am God. And even during this week, we were reading through Psalm 62 and Psalm 63, and I think that there we're about where we're up to now. And it just struck me where it's in Psalm 62. Truly, my soul finds rest in God; my salvation comes from Him. He is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress; I will never be shaken. And so, reading these psalms and rereading these psalms and praying these psalms, making them our own, internalizing these psalms. Yes, God is my fortress. I will not be shaken because God is with me. It's preparing us, it's strengthening our spiritual connection with God so that when anxiety stuff happens, and it will happen because Jesus said, in this world you'll have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. And so I would encourage you to read the Psalms. Find a Psalm. Google ones if you like. And we've already mentioned a few, Psalm 131, 139, 46, 62. Find ones that speak to you, that help you be grounded more in the presence and the security of God. And make that a part of your thinking process by even memorizing it and regularly coming back to it. And then you'll find that it helps shape your response to those situations that you come across. And I just want to finally go back to the passage we talked about last week and that we looked at communion this morning. It says, when Jesus appeared, the disciples were full of joy. And I was thinking about this during the week, that we experience joy when we achieve something and when we're reunited with people. I mean, there's other things too, but they're two big ways or times when we experience joy, right? Maybe you haven't been able to see people for months because of COVID lockdowns or whatever, and then you get to see them again. Or a family member who lives somewhere else and you get to see them and there's great joy. Or there's something you've been working at for a while, you finish the garden or you repair the thing and then you just stand back and you look at it and there's great sense of achievement. Well, here's Jesus. Jesus must have been off the charts joyful because he's just achieved redemption for people. And he's reunited with his closest friends who had abandoned him. So Jesus' joy is off the charts. It said Jesus, for the joy that was before him, endured the cross, and now he's after the cross. And so he is incredibly full of joy, and joy is a contagious thing. And so being in the presence of a joyful God gives us strength. The joy of the Lord is my strength. And so we've sung today about opening our eyes of our hearts and being with God, and Psalm 139 talks about that. But one of the things that we can be aware of is that God is joyful, the most joyful being in the universe. And that if we just hang out with God and say, God, I want some of your joy to rub off on me. And that fits in with the whole fun and enjoyment thing as well, because that's connected with that. So there are great resources in psychology, and Chris has talked about some of them today, and they are the great depth of consistency of those with the spiritual wisdom over thousands of years that God's people have found. And so I encourage you to engage in both, so that anxiety, that you build resilience for yourself, and that if you do find yourself in an anxious position, you have some idea of what's next steps to do for yourself and who you can go and see to help you with it. Because there are a lot of anxious people around, and if we have stories about how our anxiety has been helped, we can then be helpful, we can then help others. Well, we're really grateful, Chris, for you sharing with us these last two Sundays. It's been wonderful. We really appreciate your wisdom and insights. I thank you so much for that. We will be having some more resources to continue these conversations in small groups over the next week or so. And we're going to be doing some other things with parents a bit down the track as well. Let me pray for us before we go to morning tea. God, we thank you that you are with us. We ask that you would know our anxious thoughts. Lord, we invite you into those places where we experience anxiety. And God, we ask that you would lead us through them into your everlasting life. Amen.